very honored and grateful to be among all of you this evening. In this very busy city of Mumbai, where there are countless alternatives to doing anything, and we're getting anywhere at this time of the evening is challenged by very crowded trains, buses, traffic, but still you chose to come and be with us this evening. That is the goodness of each and every one of you, and I thank you. Topic I have been giving tonight is balancing material and spiritual lives. In the world we live, balance is the key to success. Emotional balance, spiritual balance, in our relationships. Because we all have diverse responsibilities. And beyond our responsibilities, we have so many temptations and fears, attractions and aversions. Krishna tells in Gita that the whole creation is built upon dualities, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, success, failure, victory, defeat, high, low, heat, cold. Birth, death, day, night, light, dark. On every level there are these dualities. There's an all-pervading energy that constantly keeps these dualities in an ever-changing motion. That power is time, kala. Everything is being influenced at every moment by time. Therefore, nothing can be stable. It may appear to our very limited vision that something is stable, but actually, on a subtle level, everything is changing. And these dualities are constantly in a circular motion. You cannot enjoy honor without suffering dishonor. You cannot enjoy pleasure without suffering pain. That's the way the world works. And we cannot change the world in the sense of how it operates, but we could change our consciousness. And when collective people change their consciousness, we could change the culture of how we live in this world. Just like none of us our scientists, our governments, our militaries, our college professors can decide there will be no monsoon rain season in Mumbai. But we can't learn how to live within the monsoon rain season and be happy. Yes? We could have a nice roof over our house, and we could have enough internal fulfillment within our hearts that whether it rains or doesn't rain, we just deal with it and go on with our life. So the key to happiness, the key to success, the key to actual prosperity of human consciousness and values is not based on our changing the environment, but on changing ourselves individually and collectively. And then naturally, we actually have a very, very healthy, positive contribution to the environment. But this can only be done effectively when we learn the art of balancing. Because we have responsibilities, we have priorities, and the tendency is to go so much passionately into one that we neglect the others. To have a fulfilling, meaningful, purposeful human life, which will actually culminate in liberation, love for Krishna, true deep compassion for all beings, freedom, ultimately, from all the dualities, requires a serious balance. We have our physical health, which is our duty, as far as possible, to protect. From the bhakti perspective, as explained in Gita, Sarvaloka Maheshwara, this body has been given to us by Krishna, by God. Therefore, this body is Krishna's property. To take care of the body is to take care of Krishna's instrument. Just like I'll give a very crude example, because I'm kind of crude, so it happens naturally. In Mumbai, some people have a nice vehicle or car, and in Mumbai, many people have drivers. Yes? So if you, the owner of the car, entrust a very nice car to the driver, does the driver have, the driver says, it's my car now, you've given it to me. If the driver doesn't give it oil and the car breaks down, or if the driver drives it in such a way that it's destroyed, doesn't give it its tune-ups, if parts break down, instead of fixing it, just let the car run down and run down until it's finished. What will the driver think, or what will the owner think of such a driver? Irresponsible and illegal. It's not his car to destroy. And a car needs maintenance. So this body is compared to a car. And we're the driver. But the owner is Krishna, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Krishna's given us a brain, and he's given us a body, and he's given us senses, and he's given us abilities. And in order to interface with this world, the body and mind are extremely valuable. Srila Prabhupada, his body was 70 years old. When he came to America, he had 2 heart attacks on the cargo ship to Jalatuta. Soon after that, in New York City, when he practically had nothing and no one, he had a stroke. But still, after that, he traveled around the world 12 times, spreading this message of love for Krishna. He understood that this body belonged to Krishna. But he understood the importance of the body. Because through that body, look what he did for all of us. And for so many millions and millions of other people. And in big or small ways, we all have the opportunity to do wonderful, wonderful things in this world through these bodies of ours. No doubt, they're only here for a short time. They're going to get old. They're going to get diseased, and eventually the bodies are going to no longer be possible to live within for the soul. That's called death. But while we're here, this body can do wonderful things. If you're a mother or a father, your body is taking care of your children physically. And the body can also, through your mouth and through your actions, you could give the highest example of values and spirituality. Right now, my humble little service to all of you is I'm speaking spiritual truths. But I'm using this tongue. And the tongue only works because the heart's beating and the lungs are breathing and the livers and the kidneys are doing what they're supposed to do. Yes? So it's a duty, as long as we can, to take care of our health. In every letter that Srila Prabhupada would write, he would give such profound, deep spiritual instructions and very practical instructions also. But he would end his letters, "I hope this letter meets you with good health." Good health means physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So the body needs proper food. In order to be in good health, we need proper exercise. And we also need proper rest. And Krishna tells in Gita that just for health alone, balance is dharma. He says, this path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little. For one who sleeps too much or sleeps too little. Who is regulated in their recreation, who has a regulated life in that sense. So we need to give time to the body. And I'm not a very good person to tell you about this part of balancing because I don't do a very good job. I'm always being chastised by everybody for not taking care of my health. But I'm trying. I'm actually speaking to myself tonight. And you happen to just be observing. But if Prabhupada said, if the shoe fits you, then you should wear it also. To take care of our health takes time. Takes, but not too much time, but not too little time. And many of us have a family, a wife, or a husband, or children, or parents to take care of. Just like the body, the same principle is there. It is a truth. It's not a question whether we believe it or not. It is a truth that our family members are Krishna's children, entrusted in our care. It's not my husband or not my wife or my children or my parents to take care of. On one level it is, but on a higher level, this is Krishna's son entrusted to me as a husband. This is Krishna's daughter entrusted to me as a wife. This is Krishna's children as my sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters. And this is Krishna who gave me life through my mother and my father. We cannot neglect our family. Otherwise, everything will be off balance. It's a sacred responsibility. We have our careers. Some are teachers, some are accountants, some are in industry, engineering, business, politics, agriculture and farming, sanitation control. Some are warriors. Some are swamis or brahmacharis. Varna and ashram. We all have a particular role, which we could call a career. And in the world today, one of the greatest problems is people become so passionately immersed in their career that they really go off balance, bringing about excessive mental stress. Families that are neglected, health that may be neglected. At the same time, if we do not really work hard in our career, we will not be succeed. If we don't do our work properly, our family's gonna suffer, our body's gonna suffer. Yes? So it's a priority. It's very important. But its success is not just how much money we make or how much proper we get or what position we attain. We may be trying for those things, but our real success is in the values in which we do it, and in how what we are striving to do in our careers is actually serving the real interest of our purpose in life. We also have our spiritual responsibilities, which is most often neglected. Because in a cultured society, people value most things that are subtle, more than things that are just grossly tangible. People value respectability, integrity, enlightenment, compassion, values. Those qualities actually touch people's heart and transform people's lives. But in today's world, it's not really an evolution of consciousness. As we often cite, we should love people and use things. But today, people love things and use people or neglect people to get them and to keep them. That's not a life. That's a tragedy. For a human being to come to that level is really a pitiful tragedy. But that energy is trying to suck everyone else, every one of us, into that tragedy. And we're not condemning it. We're feeling great sorrow for it. And we have to protect ourselves through the art of balancing. We require a strong foundation to build a stable house. If the foundation is strong, everything that's built on it is going to have integrity. Whatever storm may come. And storms do come, will come, and will always come until we're in the spiritual world forever. That's the nature of this world, with the dualities and the three modes of nature and time. Everything is changing. There will be storms, there will be challenges. You see, no matter who we are, people are not always going to be the way we want them to be. Circumstances are never going to always be the way we like it. Strong foundation, it really doesn't matter. Apuryamanama chala pratishtam. Yesterday I was visiting a friend, and his room had a big window just looking out at the Arabian Sea. It's just over the sea. And I was reflecting on this verse. The Gita tells that because the sea has so much volume of water, it's so deep and it's so wide, that the rivers that come into it, whether they're very wide, full rivers or very small rivers, don't affect it. A little lake, if those rivers were coming in strong, would flood it over. And if the rivers didn't flood it up, didn't come at all, the lake would dry up. But because the ocean is so deep, the rivers come whatever way, the ocean feels it, the ocean knows it, but the ocean is not affected. So similarly, when our happiness, when our fulfillment, when our love is deep, when it's actually connected to the Atma, the soul. The soul is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And what is that Ananda? That Ananda reaches its fulfillment in its relationship with Krishna, to feel Krishna's love, and to offer our love to Krishna. Like watering the root of the tree, then we have this natural love for all living beings. If you water the root of the tree, that water extends to every part of the tree, and we are all parts of God. That is fulfillment. The dualities of the world cannot touch that place in our heart. Health and disease, victory and defeat, success and failure, honor and dishonor, pleasure and pain cannot touch that part in our heart, because that's reality on the spiritual level. That is inseparable from us. That is who we actually are. But in order to make that connection, we have to give time, like tonight, time for satsang, time to be with people who are actually gathered together for enlightenment, for devotion. And at home or in the ashram, wherever we may be living, time to have our own personal spiritual practice. In our collective spiritual practice, we chant this beautiful Maha Mantra. We meditate on the Lord and his pastimes and his teachings. We read from spiritual books, holy books like the Gita or the Bhagavatam. We come to talks. We have our puja. We offer our prayers. And beyond our careers and everything else, we try to engage as a priority sometime in seva. Unselfish service to Krishna and to others. That's our spiritual need. So we have our health. And we have our family, our career, and we have our dharma, our spiritual responsibilities. All four, and there are others too, towards society, but these four are especially important. How to balance. It's very difficult because everything and everyone seems to be pulling us in a particular direction. And there's just so much we could do if we neglect the others. Have any of you had that experience? I was recently told an example. We're going back to the car example. That life is like a car. Yes, we're the driver. It's Krishna's car. The car has four tires. It's very important that those four tires are balanced properly. Yes? What if you put too much air in one tire and you don't put any air in other tires? What will happen to your drive? You see, if any one of these is not properly nourished, everything else suffers. If we're negligent in our spiritual life, in our career, in our family, or in our health, everything else will suffer. Just like you could be driving, and if one tire has a, what do you call it, blowout, it becomes flat. And it goes. What are the other three tires going to do? Let us say you're driving from Mumbai to I'm not going to say Pune because I just came from there. Ahmedabad. Yes? You're driving from Mumbai to Ahmedabad, and all of a sudden one tire goes flat. Can you drive to Ahmedabad with three tires? The whole car will be destroyed if you try to do so, and it'll take you forever. To even destroy your car, it's going to take hours. Because you didn't put air in one of those tires. That's the way life is. Practically and factually. There must be a proper balance. And this is what actually God gave intelligence to us for. We may say it's very difficult, but easy things don't require much intelligence. Yes? For a bird to fly, it's an easy thing. But they're constantly balancing. They have the intelligence to balance. Yesterday when I was looking out at the window, I was seeing different kind of birds flying. There was these little birds. And they were flapping their wings so hard, they were going. And they're just kind of going a little higher and a little higher and a little, and they're flying and they're thinking, you know, you could really see they're proud that they're flying so nicely. But they can't go too high. But it takes a tremendous amount of balance for those little birds. Because each wing has to flap in such a way that it's actually going forward and not going like down or to the right or left or falling down. If one wing, could a bird fly with one wing? I don't think so. Needs both wings. And both wings have to be operating in harmony with each other. And then higher than these little birds, I saw the hawk. The hawk doesn't even flap. Hardly. He's way, way, way higher, where those little birds would like to go, but can't. He's way, way up there. And he's just like this. Just floating. Of course, what he's looking for with his eyes, that's another subject. Probably the little birds. But he's floating. He's hardly moving. How does he do that? 100% only one thing he's doing. He's balancing. Yes? His wings are just balancing. So expertly. He's so conscious of that balance. Even if a high wind comes, if it's a windless day, you know, he just goes like this. And if a wind comes, he just goes. Yes. And if a heavy wind comes, he just goes like this. So nothing can disturb him. Because he's learned that art of balance. And he looks like he's not doing anything. And the little birds look like they're working so hard. Because they're not able to balance like that big hawk. This is the secret of the use of our intelligence. To really make proper progress with real inner, emotional, spiritual, physical prosperity. To give the attention that each and every one of our responsibilities requires. Sometimes we just want to go so much into our spiritual life that our families are neglected. Our careers are collapsing. That's not sustainable. Sometimes we go so much into our career that every moment is so precious. Every moment means progress. Every moment means working toward a promotion and more money and more power. And our family suffering. Our spiritual life is nil. And sometimes we're just so much immersed in just doing things for our family that spiritually and economically things are collapsing. Satsang is where we come together to actually become inspired to balance our lives in such a way that we actually are on the path to liberation, to perfection, to pure love of God. When we think in terms of I and mine, we have a tendency of being reckless. But when we see our life for Krishna's purpose, with Krishna's property, then we take serious responsibility. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful story of Sudama. He lived in poor Bandar. It's where Gandhiji used to live too. He was born there, I think. But long before, 5 millennia back, Sudama lived. Does anyone know the name of his wife? Gaur-Gopal Prabhu? Shubhavalas Prabhu? Hare Krishna Prabhu? Jai Sachinanda Prabhu? Radha Bala Prabhu? These are all great Vedic scholars. Anyways, I don't either. But they lived together. They were Brahmins. They lived in such physical poverty. Just a little, perhaps a one-room hut. They wore very, very old, shabby robes. They had to go beg to eat. And they hardly got anything. And Sudama was so weak and so thin. His wife, she was the same way. But she was so much concerned for him. She just couldn't bear seeing him in this condition. But he was happy. He was happy because he had such a pure heart. He had no envy, no selfish lust, no anger. He was very deeply self-satisfied. But still, on this worldly level, it was extremely difficult. So one day his wife, she was saying it for his sake, but she didn't say it's for your sake, because then he wouldn't have cared. So she said it was for her sake, because he knew then he would care. She said, when you were a child, your dear friend was Krishna. You went to your guru's ashram together. And now he's living in Dwarka with so much wonderful, wonderful riches. Go to him and ask him to help us. And he will, for sure. But Sudama did not want to ask Krishna for anything. But at the same time, he really felt great compassion for his wife. This is an incredible relationship. She's totally feeling compassion for him, and he's totally feeling compassion for her. She's asking him to go for his sake, and he's agreeing to go for her sake. Does that sound like the kind of marriage that you are living with? I guess laughing means it is. In that condition, you know, when everything is really, really nice, it's easy to live by these ideals. But when we're tested, that's where we need a strong foundation to maintain our ideals. Sudama and his wife were really being tested. Sudama said, if you really want me to go, I'll go, just to please you. But I have to give Krishna something, because he's God. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the Absolute Truth. He's Parabrahman. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I can't go without offering him something. But they had literally nothing in the house to give. So she went out to some neighbors and begged. And all she got by begging was some dry, flat, chipped rice. I think you call it poa. Chipped rice. How much does it cost? It's very cheap. And unless you put some really exotic things in it, it doesn't taste very good, right? You just eat it alone. You know, when you put it in ghee or in oils and you fry it and you put spices in it, or you put it in, you know, milk or dahi, then it's very nice. But just poa. And today when you buy it, it's really clean and fresh. In those days, it was, I know, I used to be a sadhu begging in the Himalayas and other places, and that's what they always give you. If you beg, they'll give you a handful of chipped rice because it costs practically nothing. And it's usually really crude. The kind of chipped rice beggars get is really crude. But when you're hungry, you just find some little river or some pond and put water with it and you eat it. And you, to be honest with you, the experience is that you survive. Coming from the West, where there's so many foods and comforts that I was brought up with, eating chipped rice was survival. One thing I learned is if you're really hungry and you really thank God for what he's giving you, your tongue kind of moves aside from the experience and you taste with your heart. And it's actually like a nectarine feast. But if you let the tongue give its opinion, then eating only that every day, it's quite depressing. But when we taste it with our heart, Krishna, I'm so grateful you're giving me, what an exalted position. This is the way I used to try to meditate. And I'd sit down once a day to eat some chipped rice with river water. your grace, I was elevated from a nice house and tasty foods of all varieties in America. And now you've given me such a position to be a sadhu eating chipped rice. This is wonderful. Thank you, Krishna. And oh, I would be in tears of happiness eating that chipped rice. So happiness is not what we're doing. It's the gratitude and the love in which we do it. And if we have that kind of gratitude and love toward chipped rice, we can also have that same exact gratitude and rice and not gratitude and love when we're eating kheer or Malpur or samosa. Or what do you call that stuff they have there? On Chopati Beach? Pani Puris. If it's offered to Krishna and it's vegetarian, we can have that same experience. So she wrapped up the chipped rice in an old piece of cloth. She didn't even have a container. And he left for Dwarka. And when Sudama saw the gates to Dwarka, they were absolutely magnificent. And he was just a single little Brahmin dressed in rags. Very thin from malnutrition. He was all alone. He was just walking, very humble. And when the people of Dwarka, who were greater than the demigods, they saw him and they honored him, because every one of them honored him because they saw he had some enlightenment, he had some self-realization, and that's what they honored. And he was escorted right into Krishna's palace, right into the inner sanctum of where Krishna was sitting with Rukmini, his queen. When Krishna, the father of all living beings, Rukmini, the mother of all living beings, Krishna, who's the husband of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, when he saw Sudama, he was so happy. He jumped up from his seat and ran and embraced Sudama and wept tears of happiness. Then he sat Sudama down on his own bed and washed Sudama's feet and took that water and drank it and sprinkled it on his own head. And meanwhile, Rukmini was fanning Sudama with the chamara fan. And the people of the palace were thinking, who is this person? He's so thin and he's so poor and he looks so insignificant. And Krishna is so happy. He's honoring him. He's worshiping him. He loves him. Because Krishna was saying his devotion, his sincerity. Then they spoke. They spent the whole night talking together. They were talking about the old days when they were students together and how at one time they were asked to collect wood by Sandipani Muni and his wife, and how while they were out in the forest there was a very, very great storm, and it was freezing cold, and it became night, and they were lost, and they were wet, and they were hungry, but they couldn't see because it was so dark. Of course, Krishna's the controller of all controllers. but just to reciprocate love when Krishna appears within this world, like he takes on our human qualities to attract the love and the devotion of our hearts. So he was lost. And the next morning, Sudama and Krishna, Sandipani Muni's wife, brought him back. And they were blessed by their guru. That you have taken such risk and endured such personal difficulty just for us. We give you all our blessings. And they were remembering with such happiness those days. And when it was time for Sudama to leave the next day, Krishna said, "Did you bring me anything?" And Sudama, seeing the beautiful palace, he was thinking, "How could I? He just gave me such a big, beautiful feast of the most wonderful food I've ever had, his prasad. And he let me sleep in his beautiful palace. How could I give him this old, dirty cloth wrapping chipped rice?" So he told Krishna, "No, I don't have anything." But Krishna knows everything. So Krishna reached to Sudama's little dhoti where the chipped rice was folded up in, and he took it out by force. Sudama was really embarrassed. Krishna opened it up and he saw chipped rice. And he ate it. He ate one morsel and went into ecstasy. And he was about to take more. And Rukmini said, "No, no, no, don't take any more." She said, "By your taking one morsel, receiving his devotion in the form of this chipped rice, you have already completely nourished the whole universe." And she didn't like him eating chipped rice either. And if he takes any more, God knows what's going to happen, how much pleasure he's going to, and opulence and prosperity. So that was that. Krishna just said goodbye, embraced him. Sudama left. As he was walking home, he was thinking, "My wife asked me to ask Krishna for some wealth, at least just to survive. But I can't ask Krishna for those material things." And he was very happy that he didn't ask. He just gave. Nadanamna janamna sundarim kavitam ba jagadisha kam. Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavata Bhakti Rohita Gitvani. This is Lord Chaitanya's prayer. He's praying to Krishna, "I do not want wealth. I do not want sensual pleasures. I do not want fame, power. I do not want to be a great scholar. I do not want to have many followers. I don't even want liberation from suffering. I only want to serve you. Birth after birth after birth. Serve you unconditionally." That means with no egoism, with no selfishness. "That's my only prayer. I want nothing else from you." The other day we were speaking of Ranti Dev. He was in a desperate condition too. He was on the verge of death and he prayed, "O Supreme Personality of Godhead, my beloved Lord, I do not want liberation from suffering. I do not want heavenly wealth. I do not want miraculous yogic powers or cities. So the only thing I ask you is, in every birth that I take, let me have the honor of suffering and even giving up my life for the welfare of others. That's my only prayer. In giving this water, which means giving up my life to this chandala, I will forever be free from hunger, thirst, moroseness, lamentation, anxiety, and illusion. Devranti Dev gave the only thing that was there that could keep him alive. He gave it to someone else. And when the devas came, so absolutely pleased by his devotion and his compassion, he said, "We want to give you anything." He said, "I don't want anything. I just want to remember the Lord and serve others." That's wealth. That consciousness is actual wealth. That consciousness alone brings happiness to the heart. That was Sudama's spirit. So when he came to the area of his home, he was looking for his little straw hut, and he saw beautiful palaces. And what used to be just like fields, he saw wonderful gardens with lakes and beautiful trees and birds singing. And there were all these wonderful celestial people with fine clothes walking around. And he was, "Am I lost? Where am I?" And then he saw this lady come out with nice jewels and nice dress. And he didn't know who she was, but she looked so happy that other people had to tell him, "This is your wife." He didn't have to ask her any questions, and she didn't ask him any questions. Immediately he understood. Krishna took my little chipped rice, and in return, he gave me all of this. They didn't even speak to each other. They just looked at each other, the husband and wife, and they smiled. And they both started to cry in ecstatic spiritual love. Then they walked together into the beautiful palaces. Sudama and his wife lived, in the West, we would say, happily ever after. He lived in that palace with his wife for the rest of their lives. And there were so many people assisting them, doing anything, helping them. And there were beautiful, beautiful lakes and gardens and fragrant flowers. But for both Sudama and his wife, they had exactly the same consciousness as they did when they lived in that straw hut with no food. Whatever they had, some Sudhir Hari Toshino, it was for Krishna's pleasure. Whatever health of their body, whatever wealth, whatever property, whether we're living under a tree or living in a palace, doesn't make any difference. If we're Krishna conscious, if we're conscious of what's really meaningful in life. In other words, Sudama and his good wife under any situation, they were balanced. They balanced their spiritual life, their career, their family relationship with each other, their service to society, their health, the best they could, whether they had nothing or whether they had everything. In Mumbai, with all the traffic, with all the expectations, with all the demands, with the whole corporate system of shipping a person here and shipping a person there and taking a person, it's quite incredible how difficult it is to balance. So I could be a little Swami just speaking from a theoretical platform, just saying, just do it. Because I don't have to do that stuff. But I have to do a lot of stuff you don't have to do. Just to try to be a little sympathetic toward myself. We all have our challenges. So many demands, so many expectations, so many pullings. We have to resist the temptation of the mind and senses. Temptation, we have to resist greed, selfish lust, envy, anger, arrogance, and illusion. If we could resist these internal pushings in our whole life, can be built on such a foundation of grace, of blessings, of goodness, of happiness. But in order to resist that, we need spiritual strength. We need a community of people who help us to maintain those values in the storms of life. And to give us the actual intelligence that's required and the humility that's needed to balance our lives in a city of Bombay. On one level, it's impossible. So we kind of have to humble ourselves and take shelter of the Lord to help and do our best. Krishna gives us hope in a beautiful verse. Anandas chintayanto mam yejana parimpashyate. Tesham nitya vayuktanam yogakshemam vahamyam. That if we just sincerely try our best, take shelter of the Lord, sincerely, Krishna will protect what we have and carry what we lack, and make this balancing actually possible. And then we could be happy, and we could bring so much happiness to the world. Gaur Gopal Prabhu, is that what I was supposed to speak about? Thank you very much.
Questions. If anyone has any questions, we would like to request them to raise their hand and we will send the microphone across to everyone. Yes.
Krishna. Maharaj, most of our life are conditioned to choose out of fear than love. So how does one work on the fear-based conditioning that we receive through our childhood days, and as adults learn to live more in love than fear?
If you have a glass of dirty water, if you keep filling it with clean water, then eventually all the dirty water goes away and it's clean. Yes? So similarly, we can change old habits, which are very difficult. Habits are very difficult to change. It's human nature. But we could change all bad habits with good habits. So in one sense, fear is useful. Fear is useful because it helps us from doing things that are contrary to our well-being or those of others. A little child I remember one time. It's one of my earliest memories. I was 3 years old. How many things do you remember when you were 3 years old? Please raise your hand if you remember anything. I only remember a couple things. I remember two things. One is, I was playing, this was in Chicago. We lived in a little apartment with my older brother and my mother and father. Want to hear this room? I was playing, and my mother used to always tell me not to go near the electrical outlets in the wall. Yes? And because she told me I shouldn't, I was an American boy, whatever age. There's this kind of inbuilt rebellion that's there. So I was just playing, and there was a fan in our living room sitting on the floor, plugged in, and I started to take the plug out, and my finger touched the socket, and I got a severe electric shock. It was such a shock. It went through my finger and went through my whole body, and I fell down, almost unconscious. But I never told my mother, because I didn't want her to say, I told you not to do that, because little boys don't want to be, that's worse than death, than your mother to prove that you were wrong. So I kept it. This is the first time I'm telling anyone. That happened 60 years ago. Did I ever tell you this story? So even they never heard me. After that, I was really afraid of going near electrical outlets. Now, that fear was good, yes? Because if I didn't have fear, I would do it again, for sure. I probably would have died. So that fear made me conscious. It made me listen to my mother. it made me alert to not in any way go near that electrical current. So in many ways, when we do something and we get a reaction, intelligence is to follow that fear and not do it again. A lack of intelligence is even when we hear what the reactions of certain things will be, and even when we experience, we just keep doing it because we just don't have fear. Yes? It's like some people are good citizens because they're afraid of breaking the law. That's better than breaking the law. So fear has its place, but it's a very low level. Bhakti is meant to bring us to a higher level where we're making our choices on the basis of love. I won't do it because I love my mother, not because I'm afraid of the electrical current. I won't do it because I won't put my head in the socket because I love God and I love and I honor and respect the body he's giving me, so I don't want to risk it. Isn't that higher? Part of love is fearing. If we love our children, we will be afraid for things that may happen to them, yes. But when it's actually based on love, it's not just fear. It's something else. It's love that is expressing itself in various ways. And through bhakti, we gradually actually connect with that energy of love that's within us. By receiving the love of others who love God or Krishna, that empowers us. And by our own spiritual practice, if it's done with proper intentions, that empowers us. And then the fears based on painful experiences of the past are transformed into actual love and compassion. And then even our fears become expressions of that love and compassion. That's what bhakti, that's what yoga is for. That's what religion is for, ultimately, to connect us. Krishna tells Arjuna, sarva dharvan puritya mam ekam sharanam braja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami vasucha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. What are the root of the tree? I shall protect you from all sorts of reactions. Do not fear. Like a little baby. A little baby is very helpless, yes? A little baby has so much to be afraid of. And little babies are so easy to get scared, yes? Little baby sitting there and the cat comes up and goes, and the baby goes, and the cat's going, and the baby's going, and the cat scratches, and the baby's, what can the baby do to the cat? Like you and me, a little cat, nothing. But to an infant baby, 3 weeks old, what can the baby do for the cat? Just crying in total horror. That little cat is like the most dangerous monster to the baby. But then the mother comes The baby cries, and who's the baby crying for? Out of fear, it's crying for its mother, because it doesn't know anyone else. And the mother picks up the baby and holds the baby, kisses the baby, and sings little songs for the baby. And the baby looks down at the cat like, ah. I'm with my mother. Yes? Is that an accurate explanation? Radharani Krishna is our mother. When we take shelter of the Lord, then the Lord protects us from all fear because we're naturally situated. And then we respond from this world instead of with, we're not just reacting to what's happening in this world on the basis of our mental conditionings. But we're responding to the events of this world with the devotion of our hearts. That transformation is the science of bhakti. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Is there one more question, someone else?
Arjun in a state of bliss, Krishna consciousness in office,
in one's office. If you're in a state of Krishna consciousness, you'll be in that state anywhere. Does that answer your question? So if we balance our life the way we are speaking, where you have a good spiritual foundation. And part of a good spiritual foundation, two things. Our sadhana, three things. Many more things too, but primarily three things. One is the time we devote every day to our spiritual cultivation. Our sadhana, the daily spiritual practice. Just like the body is strong when it has nourishing food. If you don't eat for 10 days, how will you perform in your office? Probably very poorly, yes? Because your mind is going to be very disturbed and weak, and your body's going to be weak. If you haven't slept in 10 days, how are you going to act in your office? So your body and mind need rest and need food in order to have strength to do your work. If we want spiritual strength, hearing and chanting, our spiritual practice is the food that nourishes us spiritually. Regular practice, association with a community of people who actually inspire one another is so very important. Mahatsevam dwaram ahuravam oktes tamodwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. By associating with people who are really striving for enlightenment or who are enlightened, the doors in our life toward liberation and happiness they open. So we have to balance the company we keep with people who really enlighten us. And the third thing is our own character and values. To live with integrity, to live with values. Not being in our office as just cutthroat people. We may have to compete. We may have to challenge. But it should be with dignity, respect, and integrity. And compassion. So through our spiritual practice, we gain character. We have the association of people who are uplifting us. And we have our practice. And then when we go into the office, we are like Arjuna in the Mahabharata after hearing Bhagavad Gita. Yes? Even though there's all kinds of things going on and all kinds of arrows shooting in different directions in our office, we're spiritually strong. We have integrity. We have Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question? Ready?